it's in the breaking, we come unbound. And it's in the giving, we are found. Yeah, you can barely change.
Welcome to A Medicinal Mind, Wisdom and Well-Being, a podcast dedicated to the telling of authentic stories and the sharing of insightful wisdom, exploring science and spirituality, medicine and Mother Nature. No topic is off limits when it comes to growing our personal understanding and supporting our collective well-being. With your host, Dr. Rob Abbott, a family medicine resident practicing spiritually focused and evolutionarily informed functional medicine, we hope to nourish your being so that you can flourish in whatever the moment has called for you to do. And I know you try.
In episode 7 of A Medicinal Mind, Wisdom and Well-Being, I have an amazing conversation with innovative family physician and leading expert in nutrition science and obesity medicine, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. Spencer is a board-certified family and obesity medicine physician who incorporates his passion for exercise and nutrition science into his individualized care for patients seeking to improve their health through lifestyle medicine. Spencer initially discovered his passion for fitness and nutrition science as a heavyweight wrestler at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Following his college athletic career and subsequent medical school training at the Virginia College of Osteopathic Medicine, Spencer went on to complete his residency training in family medicine through the Virginia Commonwealth University Riverside Family Medicine Program, just 15 minutes up the road from my childhood home in Newport News, Virginia. Right now, Spencer is currently accepting patients into a new revolutionary online clinic called SteadyMD. When he's not in the office, Spencer enjoys lifting, cooking, and taking long walks with his wife and fellow physician, Dr. Jenna Nadolski. In our conversation, Spencer shares his personal story and growth as a traditionally trained family physician, now practicing lifestyle-based medicine on an online membership-based platform. During the podcast, we discuss the concept of membership-based direct primary care, and more specifically, the new telemedicine-based online platform, SteadyMD. What types of doctors can one find using this platform? What kind of experience would I have as a patient? What types of patients are choosing this type of care in general? We dig into Spencer's clinical approach and patient-centered treatment. We even start to ask, do we really need the physical exam or the annual physical? And we delve into the concept of what is truly preventative medicine. And then Spencer shares his insights into the role of social support and community networks in supporting health, and even describes his entrepreneurial project on Facebook, The Crew Ship. And lastly, Spencer shares a brief glimpse into his approach to weight loss, as described in his revolutionary book, The Fat Loss Prescription. I was so fortunate to stumble across Spencer in my own backyard, and am so grateful to have been able to grow a personal and professional relationship with such an innovative visionary in lifestyle medicine. I really hope you enjoy the show. Well, Spencer, thank you for joining me today for a podcast. In this conversation, I'm really just honored to share the space with you and excited to talk about your work and just the future of sort of family medicine. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
So to get started, you know, you have a big following, but for this audience and for anyone listening, I guess let's start with just sharing a little bit about yourself, you know, who you are, you know, a piece of your life story, and, you know, maybe why we're having this conversation today.
Yeah, my elevator pitch or whatever, my quick little story about how I got into fitness and medicine and all this stuff is basically I grew up in an academic and an athletic-minded family. My dad is the biology teacher and also wrestling football coach for the high school. And my brother's 4 years ahead of me, so he was very into athletics and academics early on. And so we both kind of went through life early on in life with a lot of nutrition focus and exercise focus and then also science focus. Well, he went through high school, you know, 4 years before me. So when he was graduating, I was coming in. He was a four-time state finalist in wrestling, two-time state champ. And so everybody kind of thought, hey, Spencer's coming in as a freshman. He's going to be the next big-time athlete. So unfortunately, our body sizes were a little bit different. I was a little bit taller and lankier. He was stockier, so he had a lot more muscle per pound, a lot more strength per pound than I had. So I got in freshman year, and I didn't even start on the team, let alone make it past districts and regionals and make it to state and then be a state champion like he was. So it was a big difference in the level of talent where we were at the time. So I really dug my feet in and decided, hey, I got to do things differently. I can't just rely on my genetics. So I got really into nutrition and exercise science, worked extremely hard in the weight room and obviously in the kitchen as well, which is probably more important, and ended up gaining a lot of muscle over the next few years until my junior year, I was a state champ, and then senior year, I was also all-state in football, and all eventually leading to a scholarship. I wrestled at UNC Chapel Hill as their heavyweight wrestler. I started as a 145-pounder my freshman year in high school, ended up as a heavyweight, but mostly muscle compared to like other heavyweights. I thought this was cool. Using nutrition and exercise science to propel myself in athletics was really cool, but I really wanted to use it to improve the health of the general population. So what I did was I applied to medical school and got in, ended up doing family and obesity medicine specialty, and now using lifestyle as medicine to pretty much, you know, the same kind of stuff I used to get really good at sports, but to you know, almost use a fraction of it just to improve everybody's health that through the patients I see. So it's kind of like a story of triumph and adversity to now spreading the idea of exercise and nutrition science as medicine.
Well, it's certainly an example of, you know, living it firsthand, trying, I'm sure, almost everything in the book to excel in athletics and then wanting to pay it forward and give it back in a profession. And I think if anyone has seen pictures of you or seen your work, they realize, like, yeah, this guy doesn't just wake up and look like that. So you are certainly a great example of, you know, walking the walk and not just talking a big talk. So yeah, kudos for engaging in that journey and the process and for helping so many people along the way. It's funny, I think back, I guess it was probably over 3 years now, maybe even 4 years now, I was stumbling around on some blog. I think it was Mark's Daily Apple, so the Primal Blueprint guy, and he had a link to one of your pages, one of your articles, and you were doing like a fitness competition and were describing just the process of needing to cut weight and what it was doing to your overall health. And I think specifically you were talking about the effects on sort of sex hormones and testosterone. And I really liked the article, and I was, you know, going to go and see, well, where's this guy from? Where's this Nadolski guy from? And I'm guessing, you know, he's probably going to be in California. That's where all the lifestyle, you know, guys are practicing. And come to find out, I get to your page and you're from Newport News, Virginia, which was, you know, like 10 minutes from my house, and you were practicing at a family practice like 25 minutes away. And I was like, no joke.
I'm gonna have to meet this guy. Like, and I was just getting into sort of lifestyle, ancestral approaches to health. I was like, I need to meet this guy. This is just like beyond coincidence. This is like a synchronous moment. But, and I got to you, I reached out to you and you were like, yeah, man, come by and come shadow and work with me. And it was a little bit, you know, I guess it was a traditional practice. So here you were as really this sort of holding all this lifestyle, exercise, nutrition knowledge, and came to work with you. And, you know, the majority of patients we were seeing were, I have a sinus infection, or I you know, here's a really bad cold. And it was I was a little sad. It's like, man, this is, I know Spencer's got to be, you know, just kind of like itching to do way more than this. And we did talk about lifestyle, but I guess I would love to have you share maybe a bit about your evolution as a practitioner, because I know a lot of people can get caught up right now, and people that you work with can just see your image and see what you're doing right now and think that's what you've always been doing, and maybe not understand the process or where you've been before. And I would just love if you wanted to share a little bit about that in your clinical process.
Yeah. So, you know, you start off, you know, you just graduated medical school, and I go through medical school with this whole hope of like almost overzealous of using lifestyle as medicine, being, you know, getting your hands on these patients that are like, I'm going to change you, I'm going to help you fix all your medical problems. And so you start off that way, and what you realize quickly is that not everybody wants to change, at least right then and there. And so an evolution is that I've found ways to kind of ebb and flow with each patient, you know, not just being so like, all right, let's fix your lifestyle. Let's just do it right now. Let's go for it. And because actually that will make things worse with some patients who are just very resistant. They'll kind of push back against you. So the whole, you know, motivational interviewing and kind of rolling with resistance and going with it and just being there for them when they're ready, but planting the seed of this idea of lifestyle as medicine in their ear, to where oftentimes they'll end up coming back later for it. So, you know, I was really disappointed at first because I'm like, why aren't these people wanting this? This is great. This is going to help them. You know, you'd get one person who'd just jump on board right away and you'd change their life. And then you have all these other people where you're like, hey, you know, if you followed like this other person did, just like I said, you're going to change your life. But, you know, not everybody's ready. So there is a big evolution there and understanding, you know, patient preferences, you know, just all sorts of stuff like that. And understanding, you know, not everybody just maybe doesn't want to change, and that's okay. And, you know, and kind of feeling that way. So, you know, you go from that, and then, you know, obviously we talked about kind of the system of medicine right now, healthcare in general. And so I've evolved a lot through that, because, you know, in residency, what you're about to experience, you know, you have to take what's kind of thrown at you. You know, and it's good though. You get to learn a lot, and you might as well use it to your advantage. But with the system of medicine, you know, a lot of these corporate big companies are basically controlling each doctor, and so then finding ways to get through that and change that, it's been a process.
Yeah, and you know, I guess very recently you have kind of joined a fascinating initiative, a process of getting out of these restrictive work environments, restrictive companies, and have started working with a group called Steady MD. And you had introduced the concept to me of this sort of online direct primary care membership practice, where you are essentially, you know, an online doctor for an individual, and the patient has complete access to you. It sounds like, and you know, kind of for one membership fee, a monthly fee, people are able to engage in some major lifestyle change. And so I guess I'd be really curious to hear more about this SteadyMD and the way you're able to practice within this framework.
Yeah, so the standard system, you know, especially being in a corporate medicine world, they control you, right? So they tell you, you have to see this many patients per day, and you have to make, there are these things called RVUs. You have to get this many RVUs per day or per week or per quarter or whatever. And if you're not hitting the level, your pay goes down. And eventually, if you're not hitting a certain threshold, you'll get fired because they can get somebody else in there that will do it. That means you have to see a certain amount of people per day. You have to make up for the overhead. You know, think about, you know, we want our cardiac and brain surgeons in a nice hospital, very expensive equipment, you know, the best stuff. But, you know, for family medicine, and I'm not going to, you know, downplay the importance of family medicine, but we have these expensive offices for things that don't need that much overhead, really. You know, we don't need to talk about lifestyle and improve lifestyle, which will prevent those cardiac issues, mind you. You don't need an expensive place and expensive area to do that. You also don't need expensive nurses, and you don't need expensive front desk people and expensive coders and office managers to do that. All you really need is just to be with somebody, somehow talk with them and guide them through the lifestyle. So all in all, when these companies have you in their office, they want you to see a bunch of people, you have to make up for the overhead that they're spending, because they're spending tons of money, you know, comparatively to like a, you know, the heart surgeon or the brain surgeon or whatever, where they have to have the expensive equipment. You don't, you know, we don't have to. And honestly, the idea would be to prevent those things from occurring anyway. So with this new concept, I was getting so sick of corporate medicine. I like autonomy. I want to be able to spend an hour with my patients if I want, teaching them lifestyle. Unfortunately, you get like 20 minutes at the most. I mean, it's really not, you don't get much, because otherwise, you know, you get 15 minutes with a patient, but really it's only like five, because the nurse will take 10 of your 15 minutes, and then you're yelled at because, you know, the front desk was you know, rude to them, and it falls back on you because they take the patient satisfaction surveys and they say, oh, Dr. Nadolski is great, except that the front desk was rude. Here's a negative score. And it was like, it had nothing to do with me. So anyway, so this new, it's awful. I mean, you'll learn a little bit more, but it's pretty bad. So this new company came to me, and if the listeners are familiar, there's a bunch of coaching companies online, like Precision Nutrition and some of these other places that do very effective online coaching. You don't need a trainer in person necessarily, or a nutrition coach in person. They help you online, so the overhead is low. I always thought, why couldn't we do this with doctoring? Why, you know, do we really need to see somebody in person? For certain things, yeah, that's true, but it's actually far less than what we really think. So this company came to me recently called SteadyMD, and they said, hey, you know, we think you'd be great for this because you're really into lifestyle. You're really into exercise. You could get a lot of people that are into fitness that don't have a fitness-minded doctor. And not only that, but you'd have a system to where you could spend a lot more time with them, actually do the things you want to do for people that actually want the service, as opposed to people that come in that don't want, you know, lifestyle guidance. And then even if you do want to give that to them, you don't even have the time because the system's not right. So it's kind of making the best of both worlds. I had some pushback towards them because I was like, I'm already getting paid a lot with this doctor job. I don't really like it. But I was also slated to be the obesity specialist for this hospital system, which was kind of a big deal because I actually created the job and worked with the vice presidents of this big, huge company. But, of course, through bureaucratic processes, it kept getting delayed and delayed to the point where I was getting so annoyed. And this SteadyMD had me do an announcement on Facebook to see if I could do like a pilot, just to see how many people would sign up. And on a Friday afternoon, which is like the worst time to make a Facebook post to try to sell some sort of service. I mean, literally, it's the worst. It's the worst. I made this little post like, hey, I can be your doctor now. Thinking it would get like crickets, and 130 people signed up for this service that's $80 a month, which is a pretty big deal because I, you know, I've tried to sell like books and stuff online, and you don't get that many on Facebook. People just not like it, and it'll go into the Facebook purgatory, where you, the post is never seen due to their algorithm.
That sounds like an awful place.
Yeah, it's not good. It's due to their algorithm. If you don't get many likes right away and shares, it just swoosh, and nobody will see it in their news feed. So, yeah, I made this post, and over the weekend, like 130 people or something like that, some crazy amount signed up, which was pretty cool. And at that point, I was still frustrated with my company that I was working for at the time, but I was like, I still have this contract waiting. They're trying to make this to be this obesity specialist. I don't really like this family medicine job either, but whatever, I'm getting a paycheck. Well, because of this, how successful the pilot launch was on the Friday afternoon, SteadyMD offered me a full-time position to kind of be their first full-time doctor, because they want to see if this specific system would work, basically this program. And so what it is it's like having a doctor in the cloud, a concierge doctor in the cloud. So you pay a low monthly fee of $80 is what it is now. We're kind of testing some pricing. I could probably charge more, but that's okay. I like to keep it low cost if possible. And you get a 1 hour, they call it onboardings, but it's basically an establishment of care visit or a consult almost. 60 minutes, just one-on-one, no nurses taking your blood pressure and all these different things to keep you away from me. It's just us talking. I get all your medical history, and then I can order labs. I can refer to specialists if needed, but hopefully with the time I get to spend with you, we don't have to do that so often. Can send for imaging if I need to. I can prescribe medicines if need be. But the coolest thing is that after that 1 hour visit, you can schedule as many follow-ups as you really need or want. But most people, what they do is now we have this app. Now you can just text with me. You know, things are so much more informal nowadays. I personally don't have time to go into the doctor or even want to drive, 30 minutes and then wait for a while. And, it's basically a half day of activity just to go see the doctor for 10 minutes. So with this, you don't have to drive anywhere. You just use your phone or your computer. You Skype with me, or we use Zoom. And then afterwards you can just text, hey, can I get these labs done? It's been 3 months, say for like your thyroid or something. Yep, let's check. Oh, yep, they're off a little bit. I'm going to change your medicine. All through text, all through just quick informal texts, as opposed to taking time out of your day to then go see a doctor who may not have time to discuss with you very much. It's pretty cool. And so I've been doing this now for over a month full time. I was doing it part time on the side. And it's pretty, people are loving it because they actually get a doctor who's into lifestyle, into exercising, not going to tell you doing squats and things are bad for your knees or taking creatine is going to explode your kidneys or something like that. It's, people are really enjoying it. It's pretty cool.
That's incredibly encouraging and refreshing to hear that it's, first of all, people that are willing to try something that's a little outside the box and, maybe doesn't have the guarantee of, well, this is what we've always been doing and we know that this is going to work. And so actually, as we come to understand it, a lot of traditional approaches aren't working. But the fact that, this company and these individuals were willing to take part in this process and kind of experiment and the type of service and care you're able to give them, I definitely recognize the importance of wanting to be there with people with their desires, with their goals. As we've alluded to this entire podcast, it's, it doesn't matter what I want for you as a physician. It's really about discovering and helping you on what you want to work on. And it makes such a big difference if, as a provider, you're getting to work with people who are already motivated, who are choosing to work with you, knowing you have a different skill set. And it's not about just like putting yourself in a box and saying, I will only work with these individuals. There is a process of digging people out of that dirt and place of denial where they don't see perhaps things that can nourish them. But it's really refreshing to kind of see both sides of from the patient perspective and from your perspective, you know, being able to work together to restore and maintain wellness. And, you know, and for $80 a month, I mean, for some people, we get, you know, our generation and just in general, I feel like we've become so entitled to everything being as cheap as possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, the dollar menu is the perfect example, like the dollar menu or the dollar store or just, you know, the what we see is, oh, I have to pay a $15 copay. And if you ask someone, you know, like we just talked about that overhead piece, it's like, so do you think 30 minutes of my time really only cost $20?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and it's not to put the entire burden of cost on you, but can we somehow allow the patient to understand, or as individuals understand how much someone's time, how much that service truly costs? And actually, I can empower you and give you as a consumer, you know, you can choose where you want to spend your money. You can choose how to invest your money into supplements or food or time with an individual who can teach you and guide you. And to me, that's freedom. You know, I just finished this last year where I had to have medical insurance as a student, and there was a student plan. And I don't want to get into the super details of it, but essentially I was having to pay in total the premium and my deductible like $3,400 just to play the game. And I'm sitting here like, I'm not going to use this system at all. Like, I'm praying God, you know, hopefully I don't get seriously injured or something awful happens. But if I stay, you know, healthy, that $3,400 is just completely gone.
Yep.
All the services that I would want to receive aren't going to be, I can't use them for anything. And even if I wanted to go get labs with my insurance, I still have this $600 deductible. And oh, what can I, like, check testosterone, one testosterone level or something, because the lab prices are so exorbitant.
Yeah.
And it's like, I want to use that $3,400. Like, I'd love to pay someone $80 a month or to pay for some, you know, outside labs from direct labs. But I couldn't do that because of the system and the bureaucratic, you know, way. I couldn't even do that. And to me, that's a problem. And so that the fact that there's people and structures now that are recognizing that, and someone can come to you and circumvent that structure, and it's not to get rid of insurance. You know, we can still have catastrophic insurance or join a health share, but we need other systems to help people who are not dealing with the end spectrum of chronic disease and require interventions beyond what can be done through lifestyle means. But what kind of patients have, I guess I keep talking very generally, but what kind of patients have you been working with recently? What are the types of people that have reached out to you?
Right. So the concern was, you know, my brother's an endocrinologist. He's in just getting out of the Navy. You know, he was concerned that, oh, you're just going to get a bunch of worried. Well, you know, of course, there's some of those. There's some people that just want to be proactive about their health and just have me there and you know, get labs every once in a while and look at their lifestyle and see what I can help them with. But there's also a group of patients who I think will be really interesting to see how this model works for. And I've just in one month proven that it is good. There's people that follow me on Facebook. They want to improve their type 2 diabetes and other weight comorbidities with lifestyle. So I've had a few patients with like uncontrolled type 2 diabetes join, and they're already seeing the benefits of having a doctor who understands lifestyle very well and also understands the pharmacotherapy of type 2 diabetes, in that you actually address the underlying cause of the type 2 diabetes and not just kind of address the, you know, whatever you want to call it, the ink blots on the paper of the lab tests, and just throwing a ton of insulin at somebody just because their blood sugars are higher. So it's been really cool. It's a nice mix, you know. Of course, you're going to get some of the people that are, you know, just they're completely healthy and they're a little bit obsessed with the health almost to a fault. But then that's actually not too many people, and it's mostly probably, you know, normal guys and gals that want to stay healthy or improve a few little things. And then there's also the folks that have diseases that want to improve them with lifestyle. So it's a good mix. It's actually not too bad. I I find it fulfilling. It's and it's great for my lifestyle as well, not being cooped up in a dark clinic where I see a million people and not even able to help too many because of the time constraints. So it's pretty cool.
No, it's wonderful. You're able to do deep work, you know, with these individuals one-on-one, but then also still, you know, exist in this space, you know, in Facebook and your other outlets to kind of help on a broader spectrum. I'm kind of curious, what does, you know, you've had a lot of different training, some formal training in family medicine, and but also in, you know, in obesity medicine. But was curious, what is your process like sort of clinically with patients? We've also kind of spoken, you know, kind of broadly and generally about lifestyle medicine, and that can mean, you know, lots of different things, or a lot of people are familiar with the term integrative medicine. And I think we get lost sometimes in word salad, or what do these things actually mean? Without kind of, you know, trying to stay away from some of the labels, what exactly does your process look like when you start to work with a patient, and what areas do you focus on?
Yeah, I mean, so some people come to me for specific issues, you know, and of course we work on those specifically. But if someone comes to just establish care with me and just be like, hey, here I am, what should I do type of thing, I get a very, you know, detailed history of, you know, social history, all the things that you're going to be, I mean, you've learned them in medical school, but you're going to learn it even more so in residency, where you learn how to get a good history, try to get to know them. That's the whole point of family medicine is, you know, internal medicine, and this is kind of the fight between, there's no real fight, but the kind of the quips between the two. Family doctors will basically say, oh, internists, all they do is look down at the ink blots on a paper and the labs, and then just kind of him and haw over just the physiology. Family doctors, we learn that stuff, but you know, their thing is that they're going to look at the full picture, look at, you know, mental health, social history is super important, understanding family and other social dynamics. You know, so the goal with SteadyMD especially is really get to know somebody to where they become your friend, and you can be there for them, but also still serve and still have that good doctor-patient relationship. Obviously, you don't treat your friends, but you kind of want to teeter that line to where you get to know someone so well that you know how to treat them. You know when they're truly sick. You know when they're, you know, not faking it, etc. So the way I do it is very detailed history. I want to get to know them. I want to know about their jobs. I want to know about their family life, how they're feeling, how their sleep is. It's super important. People forget about that. Of course, I get into diet and exercise, you know, with my background, but I want to know the big, you know, the big rock stuff, you know, sleep, stress, diet, exercise, everything about them, medicines they've tried, all that different stuff. What their current life's like? Are they happy? You know, what their mood's like? What's their family life like? And then based off that, you start breaking down each thing depending on where you see might be an issue. You know, of course, you get screening labs if you want to for certain things, and depending on the patient's risk, you may go a little bit further and get advanced lab testing. It's all about knowing the patient well, though, and getting a detailed history. I think that's very important. And that's why the SteadyMD works, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, you can't even touch your patient. How do you know what's wrong with them? It's like, I'm gonna argue that actually I think the history is way more important than the physical, unless they have a specific issue. You know, in residency, we were taught to do rectal exams on pretty much everybody. If they don't have an anus, and if you don't have fingers, is the only excuse not to do a rectal exam. And it's a joke, but I don't think it's not true. They start finding we're actually not that good at palpating things. So, you know, you probably recently saw in the JAMA, the United States Preventive Task Force came out talking about there's insufficient evidence to screen for thyroid cancer. I like to feel everybody's thyroid because I just, you know, I like to practice my palpation, but what they find is we're just not that good at it. And even when, you know, I'm an osteopathic physician, so, you know, they look at studies, we're just, I'm sorry to all my attendings and teachers, but Apparently, we're not good. They compare what we find in physical exam findings. They compare it to actual MRIs, where they actually look at what was there, and it's all over the place. So we're not that good, and despite what we might think, I'm not going to downplay the importance of a physical exam. But you know, when you're just talking to somebody without specific complaints, sometimes you can do more harm than good with doing physicals. Maybe you feel something on the prostate or something like the thyroid. I see a lot of people ordering thyroid ultrasounds because they thought they felt something and they come back negative, or then with a nodule on the other side or something like that was incidental. Now you got to follow it up, possible harm from that because now they got to keep being followed where it's going to be so slow growing. You know, I've seen, you know, someone made a story when I was talking about the SteadyMD about, yeah, but one time this person thought I had a liver enlargement, so they ordered an ultrasound, and then they ended up finding cysts on my kidney. So how would you go about that? I'm like, well, they thought you had a large liver. It had nothing to do with your kidneys. So it just by chance happened to be that they found that. It was an incidentaloma. It wasn't even their physical exam was wrong, you know. So it was literally by chance that they found it via, you know, the ultrasound. So it's like, again, you know, I don't want to downplay because I think my attendings may kill me if I said the physical exam was not important. It is important for certain things, you know. But if you're just...
But I'd say, yeah, in the setting that we're, you know, talking about, I think, you know, recommendations, people are starting to argue that the yearly physical, quote-unquote yearly physical, is maybe not needed and, like, as you're just saying, potentially harmful. Maybe, you know, if you're perfectly healthy with no real complaints and you go to just get that yearly physical because someone told you to, maybe you walk out of there with two prescriptions and a date with an imaging center to look at, you know, something, and it turns into this crazy spiral of worry.
Yep. And then we're paying more, you know, and then we're paying more money for these things, and costs go up. Yeah, no, exactly. So the British, you know, we could go on about socialized medicine, and, you know, that's the negative connotative word for their universal healthcare. But the NHS, you know, they don't do physicals, as far as I understand, because they know it doesn't save money. They get in their preventive stuff for, you know, when they have people in for other issues, but they don't do physicals. And I don't, patients come in for physicals when they see me, when I used to be in the clinic, and they would kind of get annoyed that I didn't do just get them completely undressed and look at every crevice. Cause the most I would do, I would sit there and talk to them about lifestyle. Because that's what, you know, you want to, the preventive stuff is, that's really where the most juice is, you know, the most meat. You talk to them about their lifestyle and preventive stuff. It's not from looking at their body and everything like that. You may get a few little clues here and there, you know, from certain things. Between screening labs and history taking, I think you can get most stuff, honestly. I mean, pre-op examinations, I have found like an atrial fibrillation, an AFib, one out of maybe 200 that I've done. But you know, you wouldn't do a pre-op examination through the internet anyway. So that would be important to give a pre-op physical, just to listen to their heart. But you know, I don't know. I think you know, people come in, I'm ready for my physical, I want you to check everything. It's like, what am I looking at? Do you want me to just stick my finger up your butt for no reason? Like, do you really want that? I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, what's... Yeah.
And if you told them, honestly, it's like, if you want me to be able to tell you with some degree of certainty that you're going to be able to flourish and avoid major chronic disease, I'm going to have to do much more. And actually, it would be better if I spent my time talking to you and maybe then doing some lab work, but spent most of my time talking to you rather than, you know, doing a physical and touching you. And it may sound like you said, it's sort of like we're touching on this sacred act of the physical exam, and it does have its place. But I think we've constructed a situation where the expectations of the patient and the reality of what can come from it are actually a little bit different. And so, you know, we have to be open to recognize the potential harms and potential benefits of a given service and a given act. And I think it's just, we just have to have that discussion. We're just having that discussion.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's just that, you know, some patients, it's ingrained to them that they need to get, you know, examined all sorts of different, in all sorts of different areas of their body. I mean, but it's just, it's actually not true. And even, you know what, even breast exams, it's controversial.
They no longer, I think from the family medicine world, they no longer.
No,
but obstetrics are different, but they no longer recommend them.
Nope.
From a, yeah.
Yeah. And, and you know, the colleagues, they're like, wait, you're not doing breast exams? It's like, well, are you keeping up with the latest literature? Like, no, I'm not doing them because again, we'll find things that aren't actually there. You know what I mean? And then we'll call his worry and then biopsies and all sorts of stuff. Or maybe we will find something there, but it's the data is not strong for it. So, you know, again, it's the same thing. Exactly.
Yeah. One of my, good friends, actually, as part of a podcast I did with Chris Masterjohn a couple months ago, brought up a really good point when he was discussing the role of preventative and lifestyle medicine. And he put on a spectrum. He's like, you know, at one end we have completely healthy with just no issues. And the other end we have, you know, structural end-stage disease. So chronic heart failure or chronic kidney disease or end-stage liver disease. We have these structural, major structural defects in major body organ systems that aren't going to be reversed by the best nutrition approach. We've gotten so far down in the spectrum of disease that, you know, simply putting in, you know, more vegetables in someone's diet is not going to be able to completely reverse. Yeah, I know there's always a place for, I wouldn't say this is an excuse to not do those things, but recognizing potentially the limitations of a lifestyle-based approach. And so he was like, that's why we have to be upstream. You know, the preventative piece is putting all of these habits, these lifestyle approaches in place so that we can prevent the, you know, major structural chronic diseases or the sequelae of diseases such as type 2 diabetes. And it's really difficult to see that when you are used to intervening at some stage of chronic disease, whether that's, you know, earlier on, you know, when, you know, diabetes is, you know, just beginning and starting to affect the nerves, or at the end where someone maybe is requiring an amputation. And if you're just simply used to, if the only tools you have in your kit are intervening at those end stages of disease, then we will never do our service for patients. And, you know, it takes a open mind to recognize where prevention needs to be. And I don't want to get too much on my soapbox, but also the idea of mammography and colonoscopy and some of these things being preventative is a complete misnomer. So doing a mammogram is not going to prevent you from getting cancer. It's trying to detect cancer. It's actually trying to detect cancer. What it's potentially trying to prevent is a cancer that might kill you. And even the data on that is extremely, it's still sort of, you know, unsure. But it, you know, and a colonoscopy is not going to prevent necessarily colon cancer. Yes, you can go in and maybe find a polyp that would later grow into a cancer, but, you know, it's finding cancer that's already there. What's actually going to prevent cancer, or hopefully prevent cancer, is making all of these lifestyle modifications. So I just, you know, I know it gets in the weeds of, you know, just using, you know, terminology, but that is not true preventative medicine. Doing all of those, and that's where I think people are like, so it's time for my colonoscopy, or it's time for my prostate exam. And it's like, those aren't going to prevent you from getting cancer. They may be able to, in certain cases, we detect something which already is a cancer, and we can prevent you from dying from it, or we find something that would potentially later grow into a cancer and cause you issues. Also, it could grow into nothing, and we cause you more harm. But I think, like, if people, we start to push that message at a public policy level, then people will be like, oh, wow, I need to work with someone like Spencer Nadolski, who is engaged in this process and doesn't simply intervene at the end where structural disease is an issue.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's all about primary, primordial, or whatever you want to call prevention right from the get-go. Exactly.
Man, well, I want to honor your time. I had probably one or two more questions, kind of areas I wanted to ask you about. The first was, you have been a great entrepreneur and sort of visionary of seeing the role of social support in creating health, recognizing I can only do so much as an individual one-on-one. And you created a sort of social support network, I think through Facebook a few years back. And I wanted you, to talk about this, and perhaps, there's listeners here that are a part of that network who maybe can comment about that experience. But what was your vision behind constructing this social support network, and what is it exactly?
Yeah, so there's some good research by a Dr. Sherry Pagodo up in Massachusetts. I went to an obesity conference a few years ago. I go to the same one every year, but it was really cool because I've noticed the same thing in my patients, where she found that random people on the internet are actually more helpful and more supportive for you compared to friends and family. It's kind of interesting to think, because it's like, why would random people, who you don't even know, be a little bit more supportive? Well, they're going through the same processes as you, and there's a different dynamic. The your friends and family, who you think would be supportive, can sometimes sabotage you, and it's maybe not intentional, but it's a weird phenomenon. So for my patients, I made like this little support group on Facebook. It's not HIPAA compliant, but I wanted to see if this was kind of true. And so what I found is actually my patients started helping. They didn't know each other. They started helping each other. And what you find is that a lot of times, and actually more often than not, I have very good strategies for all sorts of different things to help them. But what you find is that people going through the same issues and same program or whatever with lifestyle, they'll help each other more than what I could ever help them. Like, because you get this kind of crowdsourcing phenomenon going on. And the research shows, you look at Weight Watchers, everybody's like, oh, it's because their point system. Yeah, of course, you're lowering calories, whatever, and they're going to lose weight. But what people really found helpful were was a support group, having the support, the accountability, and having other people help you. So if you can utilize online, again, the overhead's low. You don't have to leave your house. You always have connection with your phone now. How cool technology is. You can always have a support group. So actually, I have one. It's still going. It's called the Cruise Ship. But I've actually developed a new one because I wanted to make a program specific one. The Cruise Ship one that I had before is kind of a free one that I was just seeing if people would join and start helping each other. What I've developed now is one where I actually have people who join my new, it's a 27-day fat loss prescription. It kind of jumps off my book, The Fat Loss Prescription, but it's a course where you start learning the healthy habits and go through a specific a nutritional plan where we do some cool things like nutritional periodization, all sorts of stuff where you do those things, but you're also with the support group. And again, what I'm finding is that the group is way more powerful than just my individual helping of patients, because they all start jumping in, helping each other, telling them things that I didn't even think of. And it becomes greater than you. You give a framework and then they jump off of it and create this whole new thing that you just could never do by yourself. It's quite fascinating.
I love it. I mean, I think I joined at the very beginning. I know you had, had kind of filled me in when we were first meeting. You're like, hey man, you got to check this out. We'll see, what it's going to be like. And you have all the disclaimers, and then you're like, look, I'm not your doctor. I am not providing medical care in this space. This is just a space for you guys to connect and share ideas. And you acknowledge, like you just said, it's not, HIPAA compliant, but I'm not, you're not being someone's doctor in this space, but I found it so fascinating to see how people were supporting each other. And, you know, some people are getting it in the family medicine space and moving to group visits. And there's so much that can be done from a health education and support network there. But even that's still, you know, at most maybe, you know, 10, 12, 14 people at a time. And it can still be within the confines of a doctor's office, which might not be the most comfortable, or certainly isn't probably as comfortable as your own home. And I just, I love to see where technology and social media can be used for a very positive, nourishing good. Yes, there's some dark sides of everything. A lot of things that technology, we can get lost in certain aspects of social media. But I saw this as a wonderful experiment and the creation of a social support network that otherwise couldn't have been put in place. And our patients are going to be our greatest teachers. They're going to show us and tell us what works for them, what's working for other people, and be the conduits to share that with other people who we otherwise maybe never would have known were going through the same issue. It's just, to me, it makes so much sense. Like, that has to be the future of medicine. Has to be recognizing the importance of social support and then going out and creating spaces for that to be possible. We can't just give lip service to things. Like, we need to go out and do it, create those spaces. And so thank you for just being that type of visionary and for being willing to, put things out there. And maybe you don't have it right on the first go, or you recognize I don't have all the answers. But being willing to evolve and to change as the moment requires.
Yeah, man. No, I appreciate it. I mean, I'm just kind of trying to take what people have already found and maybe hopefully improve upon it and then see where it goes. And, the group office visits is the kind of the idea I got, where it's like, that's kind of the idea with SteadyMD and these little internet things that I'm doing. It's because it's like, hey, I feel like when I do a Facebook Live and 50 people or 100 people join and they're asking questions rapid fire and then everybody's saying, thank you, I've learned so much. It's like, I helped more people right there than I did in the office for a day in just like 30 minutes. And so
that's what I try to tell my my yoga teachers and some of these other practitioners. I'm like, you guys are getting, do you realize how much nourishment you're able to provide people? Like, I saw 5 people today and one-on-one, and that's all I had. You had 3 classes where you just, gave so much to 20, 30. It's not even about the numbers, but it's just the scale and the scope. It's, I don't know. That's awesome, right? Facebook Live, use it for, use it for such a good, nourishing space. And people reciprocate that. They're sharing their gratitude.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. I love it.
Well, awesome. Well, Spencer, I guess to close, is there anything else? I mean, a lot of what we've been talking about here is very new projects for you, but is there anything else you're up to or that you're working on that you'd like for people to know about?
Well, nothing other than, this fat loss prescription. So I'm updating my book, The Fat Loss Prescription. You can go to thefatlossprescription.com. You'll see the book there. Also, our course. I made this course with this guy, Pat Flynn. He's a really cool guy. He's a kettlebell guru and was doing a lot of cool online weight loss stuff, kind of renegade in the fat loss world. But I wanted to kind of bring the clinical approach with him, and we kind of developed this course online where we're helping people lose a ton of weight quickly and then making it sustainable, something that most people think is not attainable. But so that's a big focus of mine right now with the online clinic. It kind of goes with my online clinic in case people need more specific personalized approach. So yeah, kind of just improving on all this and seeing where I can take it. It's pretty fun.
Well, awesome. We'll certainly have links to those, the book and the program, in the notes for the podcast. And I guess, can people actually still work with you? I mean, I know it's very early on, but do you still have open slots for people if they're interested to work with you through SteadyMD?
Yeah, so they're going to cap me at 200. I'm probably close to there, but I would sign up anyway because depending on which state you're in, you may end up with me, but you may end up with one of my partners. I've been recruiting other doctors, newly minted doctors, to kind of spread this idea of exercise and lifestyle as medicine using this model. So you go ahead and sign up. You know, steadymd.com/lifting is my link, and then you should still be able to get with me. I'm close to being capped, but you might as well sign up in case, and you'll still get it with a good doctor that works with me anyway.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much again, Spencer, for sharing this space with me, and hopefully we can cross paths sometime soon. I feel like, you know, I was kind of spoiled getting to meet you early on, and now we've kind of gone separate ways a little bit, but hope to cross paths with you in person soon.
Yeah, man, we'll make it happen. I'm online now, so I can do whatever the hell I want.
Hey, you know, we can stick in the virtual world. It's all good.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, hope you have a wonderful day, and thanks again for this conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, buddy.
Awesome. Be well.
Thank you for your presence and willingness to receive a new narrative, a passionate perspective, and perhaps a deeper sense of connection with our collective purpose. Please share this podcast with any and all that you believe will benefit from its intention to relieve one's doing and engage one's being. Please share your comments about the conversation on our podcast page and leave a review in iTunes so that the voices in this space can spread to all ears ready to receive it. Music credit goes to Dillingham for their song Vessel. Remain open, stay curious, and forever be love. You walked on fire, and I know you tried.